This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhibi in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We believe that both MPs are victims of political witch hunt, which is designed to silence any critical voice that is demanding political reforms and human rights.
That's Amnesty International spokesperson Robert Chivambu calling for the release of two Eswatini legislators. Details coming up. Also, tribal clashes in Sudan's Kordofan state kills at least 20 people. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. The Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, says the continent's death toll from COVID-19 has jumped 17% in the past month. In a media briefing Thursday, the Africa CDC said the infection rate has also increased and warned some countries are testing less, often for the virus than needed. Mohamed Yusuf reports.
The Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, says the continent's death toll from COVID-19 has jumped 17% in the past month. In a media briefing Thursday, the Africa CDC said the infection rate has also increased and warned some countries are testing less often for the virus than needed. In his weekly online press briefing from Ethiopia, the head of the Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, John Nkengesong, gave a grim picture of the continent's COVID-19 situation during the month of July.
So there's been an average increase of 4% of new cases over that time period. In terms of the new deaths over the last 4 weeks, we've recorded an average of 17% average new deaths over that same period. In terms of testing, as a continent, as of today, we have conducted about 58 million COVID tests. And last week alone, the continent conducted about 1.3 million tests, but that represents a decrease of about 19% over the previous week. The overall positivity rate stands at 11.2%.
Overall, the continent recorded 239,000 coronavirus cases last week and 6,000 deaths, an increase of 7 deaths over the previous week. The Africa CDC blames increased deaths on virus spread events like the recent looting in South Africa and the celebration of Eid al-Hajj, the end of the Muslim pilgrimage in Mecca. It also blames the Delta variant, the most contagious form of coronavirus, which has spread across the globe in recent weeks. The continent's public health agency was happy that some African countries like South Africa, Nigeria and Kenya have managed to limit the virus while allowing economic activities to go on. Africa has so far received about 80 million vaccine doses from COVAX, the UN-backed global initiative to distribute vaccines to low- and middle-income countries. The senior director for Africa at the U.S. National Security Council, Dana Banks, said Wednesday her country has started to ship some 10 million vaccines to Africa.
We are happy to announce that we will be sending over 5 million doses to South Africa, over 5 million doses to South Africa of Pfizer vaccines, as well as 4 million doses of Moderna vaccine to Nigeria. So we're very excited about that, and we hope that these will go a long way in helping to provide safety and health security for the people of Nigeria and South Africa, which will then enable them to get back to their regular activities, their economic activities, and help them to build back better.
The World Health Organization has said at least 700 million vaccines will be sent to Africa by the end of the year, enough to vaccinate about 30% of the continent's 1.3 billion people. However, Matshidiso Moeti, WHO regional director, said African governments and health officials need to do more to encourage people to get the vaccines.
With the expected influx of vaccines, it is crucial that countries scale up all the aspects of vaccine rollout to reach as many people as possible. This entails mobilizing adequate resources, including finances for the vaccination activities, for logistics and the personnel, as well as addressing any concerns by communities, including those fueled by misinformation, to increase vaccine confidence and demand.
So far, less than 2% of Africans have been fully vaccinated against COVID-19. The continent has officially recorded 6.5 million cases of the disease, although the real number is believed to be significantly higher. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
A surge in cholera cases and deaths is again sparking concerns in Nigeria about water quality issues. Munachi Chooks from Abuja, Nigeria, has more on this.
With 526 deaths and 22,130 suspected cases reported in 7 months from 18 states, including the capital, Abuja, Nigeria faces the prospect of cholera's profile continuing to rise. Dr. Lars Eze, a public health specialist in Abuja, blames a failure to manage the environment effectively.
Environmental sustainability is key. Personal hygiene, availability of water, clean water, stopping open defecation, and taking care of our environment generally, both within our homes, within our body, and in the external environment.
Although easy to prevent and treat, cholera reportedly affects up to 4 million people worldwide per year. The highly virulent gastrointestinal disease is characterized in its most severe form by sudden onset of acute watery diarrhea that can lead to death, rising from dehydration. Eze emphasized the need for government and healthcare workers to educate the rural populace on preventive measures.
The most important thing we can do to prevent spread of cholera is, one, awareness, public health promotion, public health education, through the various means in the language that people will understand. People need to know what causes it. People need to know what they have to do in their environment.
David Udo, a resident of Abuja who lost his wife to cholera, told how quickly and relentlessly the disease set in.
Nobody knows. No one knows. She was just feeling stomach pain from there, stooling, vomiting. We rushed her to hospital. After giving her 11 drip, in fact, the 11 drip was not even up to a finishing level, she gave up.
Almost every year, Nigeria is hit by waterborne diseases such as typhoid, worms, and cholera, underscoring a major weakness in sanitation, access to potable water, and healthcare delivery. For VOA News, Munachi Chooks in Abuja.
The United Nations Children's Fund and the World Food Programme say urgent action is needed to prevent more than 500,000 children living in southern Madagascar from becoming acutely malnourished. Mavis Ochera and Juwaso in the Ashanti region of Ghana has more.
The situation was largely driven by four straight years of drought. Now, as the rainy season looms, the crisis is expected to drastically worsen as food stocks run low. Timothy James Owen, chief of communication at UNICEF Madagascar, says the situation has reached critical levels compared with previous years. He notes that access to safe water also is challenging, leaving children, families, and entire communities relying on potentially unsafe sources of water that could spawn waterborne diseases, increasing malnutrition levels.
So it really is a vicious cycle, and one which requires urgent action on the part of the government of Madagascar and its partners such as UNICEF and WFP. There's many issues which are driving malnutrition amongst children. Obviously, one of them is a lack of access to adequate food and nutrition, and we need to ensure that families are able to adequately feed themselves, and I know our sister agency, WFP, is working on that.
Owen says acutely malnourished children were benefiting from a therapeutic feeding program that includes plumpy nuts, rich in calories and nutrients. He says once a child is on such a program, the rate of success and a return to health again is more than 80%.
And we know that if we can treat a child and get them into this program, we can save lives. But amongst this 500,000 figure that we are alarmed by and that we are expected to see as we go into 2022 are some 110,000 children who are severely acutely malnourished. And what that means is they really are facing a life-threatening condition.
He says about 1.5 million people in southern Madagascar are food insecure, and nearly 50% of them suffer from lack of access to safe water, health care, and sanitation facilities. He says around 14,000 people in the Ambo-Bomve district were classified as being in catastrophic conditions due to food insecurity, drought, and malnutrition.
They are cut off and where they are really quite desperate in search of water, which won't in turn make them sick. We use water trucking to bring in water to these communities. We have constructed a pipeline and we have recently extended that pipeline. And water is generally for sale in the marketplaces.
He says UNICEF, the government, and the World Bank have provided cash transfers to families to help alleviate their plight. Reporting for VOA, this is Mavis Autry in Jaso in the Ashanti region of Ghana.
The UN Children's Fund warns an estimated 100,000 children in northern Ethiopia's Tigray province could suffer from life-threatening severe acute malnutrition over the next 12 months. This is a tenfold increase over the annual average caseload in this war-torn region. Lisha Schlein reports from Geneva.
A UNICEF official who has just returned from Tigray says her agency's worst fears about the health and well-being of children in this war-torn region have been confirmed. Marixi Mercado says the malnutrition crisis has worsened because of extensive systematic damage to the food, water, healthcare, nutrition, and sanitation systems upon which children and their families depend for their survival. She says a massive scale-up of humanitarian assistance in the region is needed to reverse this catastrophic crisis.
We need unfettered access into Tigray and across the region in order to provide support that children and women urgently need. Right now, we have just 6,900 cartons of life-saving, ready-to-eat therapeutic foods in our warehouses in Tigray. That is enough to treat severe malnutrition in just 6,900 children.
Mercado visited several previously inaccessible areas in Tigray, places that have virtually had no assistance over the past months. She says she was appalled by the overcrowded, unsanitary sites hosting displaced families, conditions that are ripe for disease outbreaks. But what struck her most, she says, was the acute suffering and mental anguish of these people who have had to endure multiple atrocities.
One young woman who is a survivor of sexual assault, she watched her grandmother get killed. She was raped by several men as she watched her 9-month-old baby being tossed around by other men. It's not the assault itself that is the worst part, but it is the psychological damage that people now have to deal with for a very long time.
Mercado reports the recent uptick of fighting in neighboring Afar and Amhara regions is creating another catastrophic situation for civilians in the region. She says nearly 1.5 million people already are facing acute food insecurity. She warns child malnutrition will rise beyond current alarming levels and leading to more deaths if insufficient humanitarian assistance reaches this widening area of conflict. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Tribal clashes in Sudan's West Kordofan state have killed at least 20 and wounded dozens. The French news agency AFP reported the violence broke out yesterday between the Arab, Hamar and the Maseri tribes near the town of Al-Nahoud, some 560 kilometers southwest of Khartoum. Tribal disputes over land and water grazing rights often break out in Sudan's far-flung regions, fanned in some areas by drought and desertification. The disputes became more deadly during the 3 decades rule of Omar al-Bashir, who armed some Arab tribes to fight ethnic minority rebels, demanding an end to marginalization by his Arab-dominated regime. Sudan's transitional government, which took power after his ouster in April 2019, has signed peace agreements with most of Sudan's remaining rebel groups, but many of the tribes are still heavily armed. Officials in Cameroon say Boko Haram militants appear to be changing their tactics and attacking only military and government targets in an effort to try to attract more recruits. Cameroon's defense minister has visited the northern border with Nigeria, where more than 30 people were killed or wounded this week in clashes with the Islamists. Moki Edward Kinzeka reports from Marawa, Cameroon.
L'armée n'oublie jamais ses hommes, quel que soit ce qu'il va vivre.
Cameroonian Defense Minister Joseph Beti Asomo comforts 14 wounded government troops and 4 civilians at the military hospital in Marua. Marua is in Cameroon's far north region, about 80 kilometers from Nigeria's Borno State, the home of Boko Haram. Asomo says Cameroonians and President Paul Biya share the grief of family members of 14 soldiers killed by Boko Haram over 5 days on the northern border with Nigeria. Among the wounded soldiers is 37-year-old Lieutenant Innocent Betty. Betty says he received a bullet in his abdomen when Boko Haram attacked Sangme, a village in the far north region that borders Nigeria. He says if he recovers and is given another chance, he will not hesitate to fight the terrorists. Cameroon's military said it has recorded at least 7 Boko Haram incursions on its territory during July. The Boko Haram forces targeted military positions and public buildings in the border towns of Mozogu, Fotokol, Amchide, and Ashigashia. Asomo says the deadliest attacks were in the villages of Sangme and Ziki. The defense minister says, unlike previous years, the terrorist group has been avoiding attacks on civilians, markets, religious institutions, and schools.
Il s'agira pour nous d'examiner de plus en profondeur.
He says the military should immediately examine and adequately respond to the new wave of threats posed by Boko Haram. He says the military needs the assistance and collaboration of all civilians to preserve Cameroon's territorial integrity and to protect civilians and their property. Asomo said more troops have been deployed to the border area, but did not say how many. He asked civilians to help the military by reporting strangers in their towns and villages and by creating their own militias. Saibu Issa is a conflict resolution specialist at the University of Marua. He says Boko Haram is trying to gain the trust of civilians. He spoke via telephone from Marua. He says the new wave of attacks indicates Boko Haram fighters now share the ideology of the jihadist splinter Islamic State West Africa province, which appears to be gaining control over Nigeria, Cameroon, and Chad border localities. Issa says the Islamic State West Africa province, in its operational philosophy and propaganda, attacks military positions and government officials to gain sympathy and recruit civilians. Issa said poverty in the Lake Chad Basin is pushing many young men to join the terror group, where they expect to be paid for killing government troops. He said there is a possibility of former fighters who were disgruntled that Boko Haram attacked civilians now rejoining the group. Cameroon pleads with its citizens not to join the jihadist group, which the government says only brings pain and suffering. Boko Haram violence that started 12 years ago has cost the lives of 30,000 people and displaced about 2 million in Nigeria, Cameroon, Niger, and Chad, according to the United Nations. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Marua, Cameroon.
Rights groups have condemned Eswatini's arrest of 2 lawmakers this week and the use of force against pro-democracy protesters. The Southern Africa Kingdom, Africa's last absolute monarchy, has been rocked by protests since June. Linda Givitash reports from Johannesburg.
Protests reignited Thursday in Eswatini, previously known as Swaziland, as 2 pro-democracy members of parliament appeared in court. Mtandani Dube and Mduduzi Mabuza were arrested earlier this week on charges of terrorism for inciting unrest and violating COVID-19 regulations. The unrest began over a month ago with protests calling for political reform. 25-year-old Vusia Maseko is a member of the Swaziland National Union of Students, which is among the central groups leading the demonstrations. He says the arrest exemplified the lack of freedom in the country.
Indeed, it is angering. It's enraging because these are the people's representatives in parliament. They are the voices of the voiceless. And arresting them means government is shutting 1.1 million voices, the population of Swaziland.
Weeks of demonstration have cost the landlocked country's economy at least $200 million. They've also cost lives. Local police have confirmed over 30 people have been killed and many more arrested. International organizations and governments have condemned the response by authorities, calling the use of force excessive. Amnesty International spokesperson Robert Chivambu says the lawmakers should be released immediately.
They have committed no crime and have been targeted by the government solely for their political views. We believe that both MPs are victims of political witch hunt, which is designed to silence any critical voice that is demanding political reforms and human rights.
Government spokesperson Sabelo Lameini declined to comment in response to the condemnation. Instead, he deferred to Prime Minister Klepis Dlamini's parliamentary address on Wednesday, in which he vehemently denied political motivation for the lawmakers' arrest. But the Prime Minister said the rule of law would also be upheld and apply to anyone who incited violence under the guise of free expression. Until the government meets with the public for peaceful negotiations, Amnesty International spokesperson Robert Chivambu says more episodes of violence are feared.
The government thinks that the only way to respond to these protests is crackdown that we have seen. They've deployed the police and the army to crack down on dissent. So we are concerned that things could escalate.
The international support is welcomed by student protesters like Maseko, but members from the United Eswatini diaspora say they want to see more than just talk from the international community. Kwakazi Kamolo says they want countries from neighboring South Africa to other global powerhouses to halt business with the government.
We're calling for sanctions of all Swaziland products, particularly those that Mswati is a business shareholder in. And those are some of the things that the world has authority, you know, to do.
The jailed members of parliament remain behind bars after a judge deferred a decision to grant them bail at a Thursday hearing. A new date for a ruling has yet to be announced. Linda Giftash for VOA News, Johannesburg.
A French helicopter carrying six soldiers has been detained after landing in Equatorial Guinea. According to the French news agency AFP, the incident happened just hours after a French court upheld a guilty verdict in an embezzlement case against Equatorial Guinea's vice president, Teodoro Obiang Mangu, son and heir apparent of President Teodoro Obiang Nguema. Mangu was found guilty in France in 2017 of money laundering and embezzlement. He was given a 3-year suspended sentence and a large fine. A French military spokesman says the issue regarding the helicopter is being resolved at the diplomatic level. And here's our daily look at today's action at the Summer Olympics. Ethiopia's Selemon Barga won the gold medal in the men's 10,000-meter race today as Africans dominated the event at the Tokyo Olympics. Barga finished in 27 minutes, 43.22 seconds ahead of Uganda's Joshua Cheptegei, who took the silver medal, and countryman Jacob Kiplimo took the bronze. Ethiopia's Barihu Aragawi finished fourth. Roger Kiwa Moi took seventh place. Yomefif Kajalacha of Ethiopia was in eighth. And Ronex Kipiruto of Kenya finished ninth. Ethiopia's Lamech Agarba cruised into the final of the men's 3,000 meters steeplechase in 8 minutes, 9.83 seconds. His countryman, Getnet Wale, also made the finals. They will be joined by Kenyans Abraham Kibwot and Benjamin Kigen. Ivory Coast sprinter Marie-Josie Talu set a new African record in the women's 100 meters when she won her heat in 10.78 seconds to advance to the semifinals. Other African sprinters who qualified include Nigerians Blessing Okogabare and Grace Anzu Bechinwa Kocha and Ivorian Murel Ahuri. South Africa's Tatjana Shoemaker set the first individual swimming world record at the Tokyo Olympics, winning the woman's 200-meter breaststroke in 2 minutes, 18.95 seconds, breaking a mark set in 2013. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhibi in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. Thank you again for tuning in.